Valerie Ballantyne came to meet him, slim-hipped and girlishly graceful in her short white tennis skirt. "Craig, you're as thin as a beanpole." He always brought out the maternal instincts in any female between 80 and 8. "Hello, Auntie Val." She offered him a smooth cheek that smelled of violets. Despite her delicate air, Valerie was president of the Women's Institute, served on the committees of a dozen schools, charities and hospitals, and was a gracious, accomplished hostess. "Uncle Douglas is in Salisbury. Smithy sent for him yesterday. He'll be sorry to have missed you." She took his arm. "How's the game department?"
"It'll probably survive without me."
"Oh, no, Craig, not again."
"Afraid so, Auntie Val."
He didn't really feel up to a discussion of his career at that moment.
"Do you mind if I get myself a beer?"
There was a group of men around the long trestle table that did service as a bar. The group opened to let him in, but the conversation went straight back to a discussion of the latest raid that the Rhodesian security forces had made into Mozambique.
"I tell you, when we hit the camp, there was food still cooking on the fires, but they had to run for it. And we caught a few stragglers, but the others had been warned.
Bill's right. I had it from a colonel in intelligence, no names, no pack drill. But there is a bad security leak. A traitor near the top. The Turs are getting up to 12 hours warding, man."
"We haven't had a really good kill since last August, when we took 600.
The eternal war talk bored Craig. He sipped his beer and watched the play on the nearest court. It was mixed doubles, and at that moment they changed ends. Roland Ballantyne came around the net with his arm around his partner's waist. He was laughing, and his teeth were startlingly white and even in the deep tan of his face. His eyes were that peculiar Ballantyne green, like creme de menthe in a crystal glass, and although he wore his hair short, it was thick and wavy, bleached to honey gold by the sun. He moved like a leopard, with a lazy, gliding gait, and the superb physical condition that was a prerequisite of any member of the Scouts glossed the muscles of his forearms and bare legs. He was only a year older than Craig, but his assurance always made Craig feel gawky and callow in comparison. Craig had once heard a girl he admired, a young lady, usually blasé and affectedly unimpressed, describe Roland Ballantyne as the most magnificent stud on show. Now Roland saw him and waved his racket.
"Don't be vague, call for Craig," he greeted him across the court,
and then said something inaudible to the girl beside him. She chuckled and looked at Craig. Craig felt the shock begin in the pit of his stomach and ripple outwards like a stone dropped in a still pool. He stared at her, petrified, unable to drag his eyes off her face. She stopped laughing and for a moment longer returned his gaze. Then she broke out of the circle of Roland's arm and went to the baseline, bouncing the ball lightly off her racket. And Craig was certain that her cheeks had flushed a shade pinker than the game had previously rouged them. Still he could not take his eyes off her. She was the most perfect thing he had ever seen. She was tall. She reached almost to Roland's shoulder, and he was 6'1". Her hair was cropped into a glossy cap of curls that changed colour as the sunlight played upon it, from the burnished iridescence of obsidian to the rich dark glow of a noble burgundy wine held to the candlelight. Her face was squarish, with a firm, perhaps stubborn, line to the jaw. But her mouth was wide and tender and humorous. Her eyes were wide-spaced and slanted to such a degree that they seemed just a touch squint. It gave her a vulnerable, appealing air. But when she glanced at Roland, they took on a wicked, taunting glint. "Let's blast them, partner," she called, and the lilt of her voice raised little goosebumps on Craig's forearms. The girl turned her shoulders and hips away, tossed the yellow ball high as she went up on tiptoe, then swung back into the overhead stroke. The racket sprang sharply, and the ball blurred low across the net and spurted white chalk from the centre line. She crossed the court with quick, dainty steps and caught the return on the volley. She tucked it away in the corner and then glanced at Craig.
"Shot!" he called, his voice ringing hollowly in his own ears. A little satisfied smile puckered the corner of her mouth.
She turned away and stooped to recover the loose ball. Her back was turned towards Craig, her feet slightly apart, and she did not bend her knees. Her legs were long and shapely, and as her short pleated skirt popped up, he had a fleeting glimpse of thin lacy panties, and the buttocks in them so neat and hard and symmetrical, that he was reminded of a pair of ostrich eggs gleaming in the Kalahari sunlight. Craig dropped his eyes guiltily, as if he had played the peeping Tom. He felt light-headed and strangely breathless. He forced himself not to look back at the court, but his heart was pounding as though he had just run across country, and the conversation around him seemed to be in a foreign language, relayed through a faulty transmitter. It did not make sense. It seemed hours later that a hard, muscular arm was thrown around his shoulders, and Roland's voice in his ear. "You're looking well, old son." At last Craig allowed himself to look around. "The Turs haven't caught you yet, Roly." "No way, sonny." Roland hugged him. "Let me introduce you to a girl who loves me." Only Roland could make a remark like that sound witty and sophisticated. "This is Bugsy. Bugsy, this is my favourite cousin Craig, the well-known sex maniac." "Bugsy?" Craig looked into those strangely tilted eyes. "It doesn't suit you." He realized that they were not black, but a dark indigo blue. "Janine," she said. "Janine Carpenter." She held out her hand. It was slim and warm and moist from the game. He did not want to release it.
"I warned you," Roland laughed. "Stop molesting the girl and come and have a set with me, sonny."
"I haven't got togs."
"All you need is shoes. We're the same size. I'll send a servant for a spare pair."
Craig hadn't played for over a year. The layoff seemed to have worked wonders. He had never played so well. The ball came off the sweet spot of his racket so fast and clean that it felt as though he had clean missed it, and the topspin pulled it down onto the baseline as though it were a magnet. Effortlessly, he passed Roland on either side, and then dropped the ball so short that it left him stranded in mid-court. He hit first-time serves that nicked the line, and returned shots that usually he would not have bothered to chase. Then he rushed the net and slaughtered Roland's best forehand. He was loving it. So involved with the marvellous unaccustomed sense of power and of his own invincibility, that he had not even noticed that the stream of Roland Ballantyne's easy banter had long ago dried up, until he won another game and Roland said,
"Five games to love."
Something in his tone reached Craig at last, and for the first time since they had begun playing, he really looked at Roland's face. It was a swollen, ugly red. His jaw clenched, so that there were lumps of muscle below his ears. His eyes were murderous green, and he was as dangerous as a wounded leopard. Craig looked away from him as they changed side, and he saw that their game had fascinated everybody. Even the older women had left the tea tables and come down to the fence. He saw Auntie Val, with a nervous little smile on her lips. From hard experience, she recognized her son's mood. Craig saw the sniggering smiles on the faces of the men. Roland had won his tennis half-blue at Oxford, and he had been Matabeleland singles champion 3 years running. They were enjoying this as much as Craig had been up until then. Suddenly Craig felt appalled at his own success. He had never beaten Roland at anything, not a single contest of any sort, not even Monopoly nor darts, not once in 29 years. The elasticity and strength went out of his legs, and he stood on the baseline, just a long-legged gangling boy again, dressed in faded khaki shorts and worn tennis shoes without socks. He gulped miserably, pushed the hair out of his eyes, and crouched to receive service. Across the net, Roland Ballantyne was a tall, athletic figure. He glared at Craig. Craig knew he was not seeing him. He was seeing an adversary, something to be destroyed. "We Ballantynes are winners," Barwu had said. "We've got the instinct for the jugular." Roland seemed, impossibly, to grow even taller, and then he served. Craig began to move left, saw it was the wrong side, and tried to change. His long legs tangled and he sprawled on the yellow clay. He stood up, retrieved his racket, and went across to the other court. There was a bloody smear on his knee. Roland's next service crashed in, and he did not get a touch of his racket to it. When his turn came, he hit one into the net and the next one off the wood. Roland broke his service 3 times in a row, and it went on like that.
"Match point," Roland said. He was smiling again, gay and handsome and genial, as he bounced the ball at his feet and lined up for his final service. Craig felt that old heavy feeling in his limbs, the despair of the born loser. He glanced off court. Janine Carpenter was looking directly at him. And in the instant before she smiled encouragingly, Craig saw the pity in those dark indigo eyes. And abruptly, he was angry. He socked Roland's service, double-handed, into the corner, and had it come back as hard. He crossed with his forehand, and Roland was grinning as he drove it back. Again, Craig caught it perfectly, and even Roland was forced to lob. It came down from on high, floating helplessly, and Craig was under it, poised and coldly angry. And he hit it with all his weight and strength and despair. It was his best shot. After that, he had nothing to follow. Roland trapped it on the bounce, before it could rise, and he punched it tantalizingly past Craig's right hip, while he was twisted hopelessly off balance by the power of his own stroke. Roland laughed and vaulted easily over the net.
"Not bad, sonny."
He put his arm patronizingly around Craig's shoulders.
"I'll know not to give you a start in future," he said, and led Craig off the court.
Those who had been gloatingly anticipating Roland's humiliation a few minutes before now crowded slavishly around him.
"Well played, Roly. Great stuff."
And Craig slipped away from them. He picked a clean white towel off the pile and wiped his neck and face. Trying not to look as miserable as he felt, he went to the deserted bar and fished a beer out of the bath of crushed ice. He swallowed a mouthful, and it was so tart that it made his eyes swim. Through the tears he realized suddenly that Janine Carpenter was standing beside him.
"You could have done it," she said softly. "But you just gave up."
"Story of my life." He tried to sound gay and witty, like Roland, but it came out flat and self-pityingly.
She seemed about to speak to him again, then shook her head and walked away.